We are. Last line on Samach Tes Amud Beis, 69b. Remember that the last topic that we discussed yesterday was the issue of whether I follow the Iker or the Tosefes. If I have a plant that grows first under one legal circumstance and then undergoes a transformation to enter into a new legal circumstance, how do I judge the new growth? Does the new growth, this Tosefes, go with the original, or does it go with the newer status? Does it go with the second status for the plant to adopt? So we already discussed this in terms of three cases. We're going to see two more today. The first case in which we discussed this was the plant that grew before the Omer, and then you replanted it and it grew more after the Omer. So what was the status of the Tosefes? Did it go with the Iker, which was permitted, or did it go with the Tosefes, which was also? The second case that we dealt with was the case of Arla growth on a non-Arla plant, Yalda Shesivcha Bizikena, which was, again, that pun from Maseches Kalim. The issue of the tree that had already gone through the Arla process, and then you added onto it a growth that was still within Arla. So do you go with the Iker, or do you go with the Tosefes? Do you go with the Iker for which Arla's already gone, or do you go with the Tosefes, the added growth, for which it's still Arla? And then the third case were the onions that had grown in Kilei HaKerem, the onions had grown in the vineyard, so the Iker was Kilei HaKerem, which was Usser, but then you have the Tosefes, the added growth, which grows after the Kilei HaKerem, after the kerem, after the vineyard has already been removed. So do I let the Tosefes therefore not count as Kilei HaKerem? Those were the three cases that we saw yesterday. We suggested perhaps we only follow the Iker Lechumra, but not Lekula. Maybe we don't know whether to follow the Iker, the essential part, or the Tosefes, the added growth, and therefore we'll only follow the Iker when it's Lechumra, but perhaps not when it's Lekula. So the Gemara now introduces us to a fourth case in which we might distinguish between the essential part and the Tosefes, the added part. Boy, Rabba, or depending on your edition, the Bach has Rava. Le'inyan Meiser, Mai, what would you do as far as a Meiser situation? Again, it's in terms of Iker versus Tosefes. Hey, Chidami, what's your case? Kigon, de'amdinu v'asrinu. You had a sheaf. Okay, a sheaf as opposed to grain that's been processed. Rashi explains, Shakratza Shivola Naharbe Velo Doshan. You cut down a bunch of sheaves, but you didn't actually thresh them. Ela Isran, rather you tithed them. And then, as the Gemara explains, Veshaslan Laos and Shahulin, you took the ones that were not tithed as Meiser and you planted those in the ground. So the Gemara says, De Amdinhu. Amdinhu means you gauge them, you estimate it. So the Shita Mikubetzes jumps on that, because we know the rule is Altarba La Aser Umadus. You're not allowed to tithe by estimation. As a matter of fact, the Mishnayos and Trumos say if you do, you have a problem. Because if you tithe by estimation, so that you take some extra, the result is that you have chulin and tevel mixed together. So you don't tithe by estimation. You're not allowed to. However, here, the Shidim HaKubesis explains, you have no choice, because when the grain is still in the sheaf, you can't calculate the precise amount of actual edible grain as present. So you had to do it by estimation. So the amdinu, you estimated, v'asrinu, and you tithed it. Vishaslinu, on the top line on Ayin Amad Aleph, and then you planted it, v'osifalu, and it grew additional. So im tim salomar lo azlinu and basar ikar, v'tosefes boi asure, Iker mai. So if you're going to tell me that the conclusion of yesterday's discussion is that the Tosefes, the added part, is not included with the Iker, lahakel, to be lenient, and therefore the added part requires tithing, Iker mai. Does the original part also require tithing because you replanted it or not? In other words, does replanting constitute a new planting or not? That's really what we want to know. So Amar Lei Abaye, to which Abaye replies, Maishna Mikol Chiti V'Sari De'Alma. He says, why is this a unique question? Why is this any different from normal planting of wheat and barley? Rashi says, De'Avagav De'Me'asri, even though the wheat and barley that I plant was already tithed in its original life, so to speak. Kihadar Zaralu Boy Yisuri, if you put it back in the ground, you're going to have to tithe whatever grows. Hanami Boy Yisuri, so when you put the sheaf back in the ground, you put the sheaf in as a sheaf, and it grows, of course I should have to tithe it. Why is this even a question? Omar Lei, to which Rava or Rava replied, Dover Shazaro Kala Lamibayali. You know why? Because the wheat and barley case, the normal case of things, is that you take your seed, you put it in the ground, and the seed disappears. That is clear to me. Whatever grows now is going to be a new plant, and therefore has to be tithed. What I want to know, my question is, this sheaf that I stick into the ground, and now it starts to have new growth, that's not disappearing. The seed does not disappear. Nice. So what is the rule? That's what I want to know. So again, I took a sheaf out of the ground, I tithed it, I then put it back in the ground. Does this new planting count as a new life for the sheaf, such that if I want to tithe it, I'm going to have to tithe it from scratch? I'm going to have to tithe not only the new growth, but also the ikar. That's my question. Yeah.
No new grains are going to be produced out of this.
Why not?
Sheaf.
Why not?
Because it's already germinated. You said it's already...
It's already produced something, right? But how do you know that it can't grow further? I mean, plants do. I took my plants in last fall when the weather was getting bad. I took a whole bunch of plants inside and grew them indoors. And one of them I took a cutting from and just stuck it in the ground. I put it in the little thing, preserved the moisture and all that, and it worked just fine. It grew. Then I put it outside when the weather got warm 2 weeks ago, and now it's dead. But that's a separate discussion. Sorry, Mata, what were you going to say?
No, but he's asking why. The Gemara says it does happen.
This works.
It happens.
Yeah. So the question now is, what's the status of this plant? The new growth, I'm willing to say for sure, you have to separate true and miser. We're willing to say, go with the Tosefes as far as the Tosefes is concerned. But what's the status of the Iker that I replanted? So he says, Tiv Sholei Meha. You can produce an answer from the following. Tiv Sholei Meha Amar of Yitzchak Amar of Yochanan Litra Batzal Shetikno Vizaro. Here's another case in which the core entity still exists. You have a liter of a dry volume amount of onion. You already separated true and miser. Shetikno, you tithed it. Vizaro, then you stuck it back in the ground to grow. Misasir lafi kulo. The rule is you tithe it based on the entire entity. Not just whatever grows that's new, but the whole thing. So doesn't that answer our question? Yes. So? But, that doesn't bother me. That makes it more parallel to my sheaf case. I've converted my sheaf into a perennial. So the Gemara answers, Hasam Hainuz Riyaso, Hachalav Hainuz Riyaso. Maybe that's what you meant, Yaakov. There's a difference because that's the normal planting process. That's what you do with onions.
All onions are bulbs. They have to be planted.
Right. So maybe that's considered to be unique. Maybe I can't extrapolate from there. But we get one last case within our discussion about Ikra versus Tosefes before we come back to the replanting issue. Amar le Rabbi Chanina bar Manumi la Abaye, about 10 lines down. Atzitz she'eno nakuv mahu. Rabbi Chanina bar Manumi asks Abaye, let's say I have a pot that doesn't have a hole in it. So what do I do now? So the Gemara says, what? What's your problem? Ilo nakuv, halo nakuv. If it doesn't have a hole in it, so it doesn't have a hole in it. That's very easy to discuss. I don't understand what exactly your question is. You separated truma. So fine, you separated truma. Remember that if you have an atzit sheino nakuv, if you have a pot without a hole in it, no connection to the ground, anything that grows in it is putter from truma midoraisa. So you separate truma for it, midorabanan, fine. Separate truma from whatever grows in your pot. But that doesn't bother me. Either it really is or really isn't, but it's all of the same status. So the Gemara says it's not really what we were asking. Abaye says, Dilma, maybe chazer v'nakvo kamrid. Maybe your question is this. I planted seeds in my pot that had no hole in it. The seeds developed into a plant. The plant grew. Then, at some point in the growth process, I put a hole in the plant, in the pot. I said, huh, you know, I know why it's not getting enough moisture. And I punctured the bottom of the pot. And now, I have a plant that's in Adzitz Nakuv, which Midoraisa biblically requires separation of Truman Meiser. Now what do I do? So in the margin, they give you more of the conversation. Amar Lei, hey, Nochanid Barmanumik says, Kabaye, yeah, that's what I was asking. So on my way, to which he replied, Abaye replied, Hainu achta Rava. That's exactly Rava's discussion about Ikar and Tosefes, and the plant that I tithed and then replanted and all of that. Hacha, so he replies, Hacha, chada zriyahi, back in our Gemara, Ichburi Yehuda kamichbura va'ola, hasam shtei zriyos ninu. You can't necessarily compare this to the previous discussions. The idea is either you can actually state it in either version of it. The way that Rashi says it is that I'm trying to do it all at once. in other words, I want to do the tithing now. It isn't necessarily that I did it beforehand. But you could theoretically do it either way. The problem here is that if I am going to tithe it now, collectively, I'm tithing that which grew when it was still a closed pot, which was putter, for stuff that grew after I put a hole in the pot, and therefore it's chayiv. And you can't separate Truman Meiser from the putter on the chayiv. That's my problem. So I want to know, this is part of my greater framework question of Iker and Tosefes. Do I go with the Iker, in which case the whole thing is putter? Do I go with the Tosefes, in which case the whole thing is chayiv? And if I'm going with the Tosefes, as far as the Tosefes, does it say anything in terms of what I'm going to do with the Iker? Does that convert the Iker into requiring it midyoraisa? How does this work? To which he says, the cases are not comparable. You can't compare this to our previous discussion, because the hacha chadazriyahi, here you only planted it once. It's just joined. What you did now, post what the growth that occurred after you pierced the pot, is joined with what came before. Hasam, in the case that you described, where you actually picked the sheaf, tithed it, then put it back in the ground, it's actually two separate plantings. If you take a look at Rashi, Chadazriyahi, he says, Ve'achshav kishenikva, hi matchelas lahashrish. When you pierce the pot, it starts to grow roots that spread into the ground. Gabe Baya de Rava, as opposed to Rava's question, the previous question, Shteiz Rios Hende Shibolas, there were two plantings of the sheaf, Hilkach Itztruch Leila Maboyi, Ihadem Echaivale Tosefes Leikr, Lemea de Rasuri Olo. Therefore, I can't extrapolate from that one, and I need to ask anew the question of whether having this added growth requires me to tithe from the first part or not. Now, in terms of what's actually happening in this case, how would you do the tithing? If you were just tithing the Tosefes, how would you even do it? So Rashi says that the question is, if you would tithe from the Iker for the Tosefes, and then it would be from the Potter on the Chayiv. In other words, I'm tithing the whole thing all at once. I take from the base and I count that for the Tosefes as well. Tosos is bothered, because he says the Iker and the Tosefes are all mixed together. It's not like you can separate out and say, well, this grew post-piercing, and this grew before like you made a hole in the pot.
It's like 1 year for another year, like 1 year where it was already...
Well, that's another problem, theoretically. But we said back on Lamed Omid Beis that if everything is mixed together, then Sover Garner L'Socho, then you just put everything together and you say, well, I'm doing my best here. Some is for the Iker and some is for the Tosefes, and you're done with it. So Tosefes said, maybe not. Maybe you could actually tell. Whatever grew that was new was from added branches or berries that grew up on top, while the old stuff is on the bottom. So maybe you could actually identify a difference between the Iker and the Tosefes. But the fundamental question here is, if I planted in a closed pot and then it punctured, and then it grew more, do I tithe the Iker at all? And if so, how am I going to do it? And our answer is, it's all one act of planting, the whole thing goes together, and therefore, the result is, you tie the whole thing together. It's okay. Here we're willing to say, put the whole thing with the Tosefes, and that's the way you're going to do it. The Shita Mikubetzes Yud Zayin helps to explain that's what we're saying here. Okay. So the upshot of Iker and Tosefes is not a global answer of go with the Iker or go with the Tosefes. Alan, what was your question? You were asking something?
Well, I was just thinking, isn't that a question of shear?
Right, so according to what we saw yesterday, apparently not. In other words, we asked there, we talked about where a rove grew or where a small amount grew, and we were willing to entertain even where a small amount grew. The Hosifa Shlish won't be a requirement. That's Shlish is only in terms of demonstrating that it's reached a stage of edibility such that now it requires Truman Meiser. This already did. This is already at that stage. Okay, so boy, Rabbi Avo asks about this whole replanting issue. One of the cases that we mentioned, it was the fourth case within the five, was the case in which I picked the sheaf and then I stuck it back in the ground. The question I have now is along those lines. We know that if a plant is growing from the ground, you can't separate Truman Meiser from it. Right? You try to separate Truman Meiser from a plant that's actually in the ground, it's void. That's not Truman Meiser. But what if I uprooted the plant? So it now became obligated Truman Meiser, and then I stuck it back in the ground. I replanted it. Can I separate Truman Meiser from it now? It is a plant that's already chayiv in Truman Meiser. It just happens to be growing from the ground right now. That's Rabbi Avo's question. Boy, Rabbi Avo asks, shiboles, a sheaf, shemircha bekri, which you already put into the big pile that you evened off, you smoothed out. So now it's chayiv and truma and meiser. And the vishasla, you then planted it. Vikare ale hashem b'mechubar. And then you tried to separate truma and meiser, or to identify truma and meiser on it, while it was connected to the ground. Mahu, what's the rule? On the one hand, came into marcha, tavla la, kikara ale shem kichala. On the one hand, you could say, since you did the meruah hakri, you already put it into the new pile, you now identified it, the part of it, became obligated truma and meiser, and therefore, when you identify part of it as truma and meiser, that works. O dilma, came into shasla, pakale tibla mine. Or maybe not. Maybe because you now replanted it, it's no longer called tevel at all. So Amri Le Rabbanan Labai. These are great overall questions about Truma and Meiser. What they're doing in Menachos, well, it's all a tangent from our discussion about what qualifies for use for a mincha and what is permitted by the Omer. But Amri Le Rabbanan Labai. The Rabbanan said to Abaye, "Im Kain Matzinu Truma B'Mukhav Alakarka." The Rabbanan said to Abaye, "What do you mean? If you were to do that, that would mean you could separate truma or identify truma that's connected to the ground." Utanan, and I have a Mishnah, he says, Lo matzinu truma b'mechubar lakarka. There's no such thing as truma that's connected to the ground. If you see the margin, the Maseres Hashas, Lakotzer daiti lo yadati letzayin makom of a Mishnah v'braisa shem b'furish davar zeh. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what source you have. In my limited experience, I don't know what you're quoting. The afal pichein, we have some kind of a source that says that you'll never find truma connected to the ground. But that's exactly what you're telling me, if you can do this. So Amar Lay, to which he replied, no, you're misunderstanding that source. Kitanya Hahi, when that phantom Mishnah or Brisa was learned, that was La'inyan Ichyuve Misa V'chomesh. That wasn't about whether truma can exist connected to the ground. The question was, if a czar were to eat truma that was connected to the ground, would he be liable? If a non-Kohen, would he have to pay truma Karen V'chomesh for the truma that he ate? It isn't. There can be truma connected to the ground. The question is liability for eating it. De'italish v'achil talushu. And the reason why that can't happen is because if you pick it and eat it, then it's not connected to the ground. V'igachin v'achil, and if you bend over to eat it while it's still connected to the ground, that's not called eating. People don't eat plants that are still connected to the ground. So that's why, that was my argument. My argument was, you can't have liability for eating truma that's connected to the ground, but you could have truma connected to the ground, as in our case, where you picked it, it became chayiv and truma and meiser, and then you replanted it. So that's my argument.
What happens if it wasn't chayiv and meiser, then you replanted it? You picked it, right?
Yeah.
You didn't do meruach. Yeah. You replanted it, and then you wanted to call. Then you wanted to take truma from it.
I couldn't.
Yeah, that's for sure mechuber.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that it's mechuber. It never became chayiv and truma and meiser. It would be just like if I separated
before.
Truma. Yeah.
Oh, there's no chiyuv.
Yeah.
Before.
And there's no, because we haven't reached gemara, right? So the gemara asks, well, you're telling me, this last line that you stated here, that a person who eats the grain that's planted in the ground, it does not, that's not called eating, because Baila Daitlo eats al Kaladam. I have a case in which we call it eating, even though someone is eating something he really, most people wouldn't do. Umayshnami dekasav apinkasa de ilfa. Why is it any different from the halacha recorded in Ilfa's notebook? The point of Ilfa's notebook is that this is before Torah Shebaal Peh is written down, officially. But you already have people who are keeping scrolls of halachos here and there. Remember Megillah Starim from the Gemara and Shabbos, the scrolls that were hidden away. They were, you had Kosvei Brachos, people who wrote down the Nusach of Brachos. Even before Mishnah is recorded, you have individuals in various places who are writing things down to make sure that they are remembered. So Ilfa had the following note. Beitzah comes in handy. Beitzah nivlas ha'ov ha'tahor. Let's say you have eggs from a chicken, and the chicken was theoretically a kosher bird, but it died. It wasn't shechted. And there are eggs inside the bird. Miktsasan b'chutz or miktsasan bifnim. And the eggs are partially inside, partially outside. So, mi bifnim, mitamin begadim abeis ha'bliya. That which is inside is considered part of the dead bird, and therefore communicates tumah when you eat it. Rashi explains what we mean by mibifnim. We mean literally mibifnim. If you see Rashi, mibifnim. You ate it while it was still in the innards of the bird. I hope this means you cut the bird open, but you left the egg inside and you ate it that way. So we'll communicate tumma. Rashi continues to say, when you swallow it, kedin nivlas oftar, just like the body of the bird itself. Okay, so that's the Gemara continue, and the Gemara continues back in the Gemara. Mibachutz, if it's already outside, ein matam gadam abeis habliya, won't communicate tumma. So here you're telling me a guy who bends over the body of the bird and eats the eggs that were inside the bird is chayiv. You call that eating? But leaning over the ground to eat from the plant that's connected to the ground, that's not called eating? To which the Gemara says, yeah. Talush avidi inchi da'achli hachi. B'mechuber lo avidi inchi da'achli. He says, people eat the... people will eat the egg, which is not connected to the ground. It's just in the body of the bird. You pick up the body of the bird and you eat it out of it. However, that which is connected to the ground is part of the plant. That people would never do. Okay.
If it eat it raw? Hmm.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently.
So, in this case, we're saying Uber,
It's considered to be, without using Uber Yerachimo as the phraseology, we are saying it's considered to be part of the mother, and it communicates to him like the mother's body. Yeah.
The Shas Misa was inside. Why, even when you take it outside later and eat it regularly, why isn't that also considered like Bifnim? The Shas Misa of the mother,
yeah.
The egg was inside.
Right.
And the mother died. And now you take the egg out and you eat it.
Right.
What's so the you eat it? Do you have to eat it inside or outside? And the main thing is, it was inside when the mother died.
Yeah,
right, so take a look at the continuation in Rashi. Take a look at the continuation in Rashi. I stopped short of that point. If you see Rashi on the third of the medium lines, the middle of the line, V'hadisanya b'gemara beitza, V'hadisanya b'gemara de beitza ha'ocha min nivlas of tahor min hashalal shal beitzim tahor. There they talk about the case of either eating from the corpse of this chicken or from the shalal shal beitzim. That's the connection of multiple eggs to one support system. And so there they say, tahor. That's where you actually plucked it and ate it out of the body of the bird, correct? Then you're tar, correct. But if you ate it inside, we'll communicate to him. Okay, back in our Gemara then. So yes, it's considered to be an act of eating there, but not regarding the plants. The plants, if it's connected to the ground, it's in the ground. Last piece in this discussion, about a dozen lines up from the bottom, Amar Rav Tavyumi Bar Kisna, Amar Shmuel. Hazorea kilayim ba'atzit she'enu nakuv aser. This is also part of the discussion about planting and replanting. Let's say you plant mixed species in an atzit she'enu nakuv, in a pot that has no hole in the bottom, aser, that's still called kilayim. So Amar Abaye Bishlama Iashmiin and Loke Makas Mardus Midrabana and Shapir. So Abaye says, I understand that you would be teaching me something if you told me he gets lashes Midrabana. It's not Midoraisa because it's not in the ground. It's in this pot that's separated from the ground. So if you want to tell me that there are lashes Midrabana, I understand. Ella Osir my Kamashmalan. But what are you telling me by saying you're not allowed to do that? The Midrabana Havi Israel, you're telling me that rabbinically planting in a pot counts as planting? Tanena, I knew that already. If I have two pots, one has a hole in it and one does not, and I tithe from the one that doesn't have a hole in it for the one that does, it's called truma, it's valid a truma. However, you have to redo your truma. But the point is, it's called truma. So that tells me that planting in a pot without a hole in it counts. Midrabanan is planting. So therefore, the same thing is true for kilayim. I know that already. That's not a chiddush. There's no novelty in that. So what did you tell me this for? And the Gemara ends there. The Gemara says, okay, yeah, you're right. It should have really taught me that it's Magas Darabanan. New Mishnah. Classic, very important Mishnah. Brought in from the Mishnah in Chala as well. Hachitin v'asaurin v'akutmin v'ashibola shuol v'ashifon. Harei elu chayavim v'chala. Five minim. These five minim, they are classically translated as wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. That's the usual translation of it. I'm going to revisit the oats identification in the Gemara. But wheat is a grass, barley is a grass, and then kusmin and shibolet shual and shifon are considered to be subspecies of these. From a botanical standpoint, rye and spelt are considered to be wheat species, and shifon, oats, is actually a problem, but we'll call it a subspecies of barley. And reading through the Mishnah first, though. these five species are considered grain as far as the following halachos. Hare'ilu chayavin b'chala. If you make dough out of them, you have to separate chala. Umitztarfin zeh im zeh. They combine with each other, and the Gemara is going to talk about what that means when we say that they combine with each other as different types of grains, as grain combining with flour. We'll talk about that. V'asurim b'chadash milifnei ha-pesach, or it should say ha-omer. You can't use them before the omer is brought. Umilitzor milifnei ha-omer, or lifnei ha-pesach, and you can't cut them either before then. Im ishrishu kodem la-omer ha-omer matiran, and if they took root before the omer, then the omer permits their use. V'imlav asurin achiyavo omer abba. If they didn't take root, then they go in next year's stuff, before next year's omer. That's the Mishnah.
You're saying you can't harvest it before the Omer. How did we say a few days ago that by the time they brought the Omer...
So this is taking the view that was Shalom Britzon Chachamim. That they weren't supposed to do that. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learned. Kusmin min chitin. Kusmin is a subset of wheat. It's a type of subspecies of wheat, I should say. Shibolet shual v'shifon min sa'orin. Shibolet shual and shifon. Shibolet shual is spelt, and shifon is when we render usually as oats. This is a type of barley. I have to take a minute here on this shifon being a type of barley, the shifon being oats. Rabbeinu Gershom in our Gemara, and Rashi in Psachim translates shibolet shual as avina, which is oats. The Yehuda Felix, though, the botanist in Israel who did a lot of work on trying to identify the species that we use in the Mishnah and the Gemara, argued that Shibolet Shual is not oats for several reasons. One, in the Yerushalmi and Kilayim, well, first of all, in the Mishnah and Kilayim, barley and Shibolet Shual are considered one species. And ordinarily, when you're dealing with Kilayim, you go by the way things look. But if you actually look at oats and barley, at the two plants, they don't look the same at all. Further, the Yerushalmi in Challah says Shibolet Shual grows keshura, like a row. And oats don't look like that. Oats, the oat plant doesn't look like a row. Further, there's some debate as to whether oats were even domesticated in Israel in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, that it would have been grown in that way. We do find wild oats, but we don't find domesticated oats. In fact, the Aruch, Rav Nosson Baal HaAruch, does not render it as oats. He renders it as a type of rye. The others respond to Felix saying, look, we have a Masora, that this is the way that we identify it. We identify it as oats, and that's that. But Ramosha Sternbach and his Chuvas Van Hagos, in Chelek Aleph, Chuvas Shin Beis, in fact said a person who has problems with gluten is exempt from eating matzah, and oat matzah will not qualify for the halacha. He actually said you couldn't use oat matzah. I'm not paskening anything, but he said you shouldn't bother with oat matzah. The classic story, which no one can actually research and confirm anymore, unfortunately, is that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach read Felix's research and decided that he was right, that you should be careful about oats, and oats should not qualify as one of the five minim, and therefore we made a bracha on oatmeal. He changed, that he started saying bari pri adama instead of bari minim azonos. He treated it like a vegetable rather than like a grain, until Rav Eliashiv said to him, you can't do that. You can't change what we've been doing for centuries on the basis of one researcher's findings. And he said, okay, and he went back to doing the bracha as a mizonos. Kusmin is rye. No,
kusmin.
Right, I'm sorry. Right. They do the kusmin as the spelt and the shifon as the rye. Right. I flipped the two.
None of these are buckwheat.
No, that's
kusmin. Buckwheat is not here at all. Buckwheat is not one of the five. Buckwheat is not one of the five at all.
Daughter Rachel said, right. My first went to Israel, she takes her own challah. She asked them for kusemet instead of kusmin, and she made a challah out of it. She said the thing like completely crumbled. It was like popcorn.
Yeah. Now, buckwheat is not a grain. It may be kidney, yes, that's a separate thing, but it's not a grain. Okay. So Tana, so we learned that kusmin, the last word in Ayin Amad Aleph, is gulba, which Rashi tells you is spelt, ishpalta. The shifon is dishra, and shibola shul is shibole tala, where Rashi says avina, which is the oat idea. Okay, that's our set. So he argues that it's a subspecies of barley, that there is actually a what was the Latin word I had for it? Hordeum disticum.
Yeah.
Is a subspecies of barley. Yeah, well, barley is Hordeum vulgare. it's the more general, and he's the Sordium Distichum, which makes sense. Distichum, I think, is two staffs. My Latin ain't great. But it's two staffs, which fits with the Rishami that says it grows Keshura in these two rows. Okay.
This is a
Avina Sativa. Okay. I mean, generally speaking, we render Avina as oats. So, Tani, the Gemara then says, Hani in Orez V'dochan Lo. These five are on the list, but not rice and millet. Menani Mili, how do you know that? So, Amar Reish Lakish, Asya Lechem Lechem Mi Matzah. Reish Lakish says, you learn it from matzah. The use of the word Lechem by matzah, and the use of the word Lechem here, regarding challah. Ksiv HaChal, the Torah says here regarding challah, V'haya Ba'achochem Mi Lechem Ha'aretz, you shall separate challah when you eat from the Lechem. Uksiv HaSam, by matzah, it says Lechem Oni. So, just like Orez and Dochan don't count for matzah, they also don't count for challah. They don't count for matzah, they don't count for challah. So the Gemara asks, well, how do you know they don't count for matzah? V'asam gufa menolan. Amar Reish Lakish said, v'chein tana devei Rabbi Yishmael, v'chein tana devei Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Amar kra, the Torah says, lo so challah lav chametz, shivas yamim to challah lav lech matzah us lechem oni. Don't eat chametz, eat matzah. Dvar ma'bam lidei chimutz adam yotzi ben yidei chavasa l'pesach. That which can become chametz, you can use for matzah and Pesach. Yatzu elu she'enon ban lidei chametz, elu lidei sircha. And these things will not become chametz, they will not rise, instead they simply fall apart and decay. That's all they do. The first Majitzer Rebbe, the Divrei Yisrael, said that chametz is the result of an inflated heart. Right, someone who feels very good and he's very upbeat about himself. So he says a person who is vulnerable to chimutz can also accomplish great deeds, as long as he keeps himself on the proper path. So either he'll become chametz or he'll become matzah. Sirchon, on the other hand, is the result of depression. So such a person isn't going to say a lot, because he doesn't even have the energy and the get up and go to do it, but he won't accomplish great things either. So that's the Orez V'dochan, these species, these rice and millet, they don't even qualify for it. A person has to have a certain degree of arrogance to either become chametz or matzah. The person who's struggling and doesn't even feel like he has something, he doesn't have the self-esteem, depression is probably not the right word. A person who doesn't have the self-esteem is not going to be able to sin, but he's not going to be able to do a lot of good either. Interesting. All right. Umitzdarfen zeimzeh. We said that these combine with each other. So Tana, we learned hatavua vakamacham vabitzekos mitzdarfen zeimzeh. Grain, flour, and dough all combine with each other. So the Gemara says l'may hilchasav. What are you combining them to do? So Amar Rav Kahana le'inyan chadash. Rav Kahana says, as far as the shear for chadash to be liable if you ate them as chadash. Rav Yosef Amar le'inyan chametz pesach, liability for the chametz on Pesach, again for the shear. Rav Papa Amar le'inyan ma'aser sheni di'yachal echutz l'chol malaki. If you ate ma'aser sheni outside of Yerushalayim, again kashir, you get malkos. Rav Amar le'inyan tumas ochlin, and Rav said, as far as the kibetz of the excised amount to communicate tumas ochlin. Va'kamash malan, it's teaching us that tvua ukmachin dumi. That the flour, the grain, and the flour are considered like the dough. They're all together. Ma hasam uchla be'ene av hachanami uchla be'ene. They're subject to the same rule of uchla be'ene, that the food is there itself. And Rashi explains what that means. Ma hasam batek uchla be'ene. It's the first thin line in Rashi. La fuke klipas saorim besubin shebekamachin, as opposed to the hull from the barley or the bran from the flour. The delav ochlim ninhu. Bran is not food. I don't care what they package it in. I think the hull is the husk. No. I think so. Yeah. So that's not food. V'lo mitzdarfi l'chabetza, and therefore won't be combined for the kibetza.
Yeah, so you don't have to make a bracha on bread.
Well, you make a bracha on it, but do it holding your nose. So he says, av hachanami be'enei. So the Gemara says, Vatanya, and in fact I have a brisa supporting this idea. Chita ben klufa ben she'ena klufa mitzdarefes. If you're dealing with wheat, then the shell does combine. Saora, it's the barley one. Klufa mitzdarefes, she'ena klufa ein mitzdarefes. If the shell is removed, then everything you have there will count towards the shear. If the shell is not removed, it won't. That's what he says. Rashi explains why. He gives it two explanations. If you take a look at Rashi, klipas chitim, It's five lines down in the thin lines in Rashi. Klipas chitim dakav arakahi. The shell from wheat is thin and soft, uruya lechol, and suitable for eating. Lefichach mitztarefes. Therefore it's going to combine. That's Rashi there. We have to come back to that in a moment. But that's the idea. So the Gemara challenges and says, well, wait a minute. Ini, is that so? Vatana deve Rabbi Shmuel. Didn't they learn in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel? I'll call Zera Zerua Asher Yizareya, talking about how produce becomes eligible to receive tumah, to communicate tumah if it becomes wet. If liquid falls, right, the Shiva Mashkin, if liquid falls on the seed. And we learned, Kiderach Shebnei Oda Motziin Lizria Chita Beklipasa Usaora Beklipasa Va'adashin Beklipasa. It means the way that people normally plant, which is the seeds in their shells, and yet they can become tummy. So which is it? So he says, lo kasha, that's no problem. Habalachos habiyavashos. We distinguish between where they are moist and where they are dry. Rashi gives you two explanations. His first approach is that where they are dry, it's not called a shomer to the produce, because it'll crumble away and fall away. His second approach is that where they are moist, they're actually edible. Where they're dry, they're not edible. But Rashi doesn't go with that one. But those are two possible explanations. Tosus is bothered by this idea that you're planting the seeds in the shells, because you have a beautiful mashal at the end of Ksuvos, where they talk about how you plant the seed without its shell, unclothed, and it produces much clothing, meaning all the plants that grow from it, and the human being, and the planting in the ground. So Tosus says, Rabbeinu Tam says, what he's saying is, even if you were to plant it without the shell, even still, it would produce such growth. So, but the truth of the matter is, they normally planted it in the shell. They didn't shell the wheat and then use it for seed. Okay. All the farmers here can discuss this. The Vasurin Bechadash Milifnei HaPesach Milifnei HaOmer. We said, you're not allowed to use it as... not allowed. It doesn't count. Sorry, for the shear, for Chadash. I'm sorry, no. Right. All these five are Aser before the Omer. Menahani Mili. How do you know this? Amar Reish Lakish, Asya Lechem Lechem Mimatzah. Now, what is it that he's proving? Rashi says, it's how do I know that it's only the five and not Orez V'Dochan? How do I know it's only these five for that? Tosa says, we just did that. We did that earlier on the page. We did the Lechem Lechem Mimatzah and all that. What are you adding here? Rather, what he's saying is, I would have assumed, since the Omer is brought from barley, only barley is subject to the laws of Chadash. And that's what you need to teach me, not to exclude Orez V'Dochan, we did that already, but to include the rest of the five. That's our purpose of extrapolating from matzah. Okay. How do you know you can't harvest it? We connect it in from chala, which is called rachis. It should be rachis kitzirchem, the first of your cutting. My kodem la omer, or rachis anyway. Rachis are isozechem. My kodem la omer. So what exactly do you mean when you say before the omer? Rabbi Yona Amar Kodem Kitziras HaOmer. Rabbi Yona said, we mean before you cut the Omer. Rabbi Yossi Bar Zavda Amar Kodem Havas HaOmer, before the Omer is brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Tanan, I have a Mishnah that says, Asurin, you're not allowed to eat them, Asurin B'chadash, Lifnei Pesach or Lifnei Omer, V'liktzor Lifnei Omer or Lifnei Pesach. This is our Mishnah. So he says, Bishlam Alamanda Amar Kodem Havas HaOmer. It's fine if you're going to tell me that means before you bring the Omer in the Beis HaMikdash, you can't eat it. That's why they didn't link the two together in the Mishnah. They separated out. Asurin b'chadash lifnei pesach v'liktzor lifnei v'liktzor lifnei haomer. You separate them out because one is before you cut and the other is before you bring the mincha. So I understand why you didn't mix them. El amanda amar kodem kitziras haomer. However, if you're not allowed to cut it, and you're not allowed to eat it before the harvest, you should have mixed it together in the Mishnah, been more concise, and said, Asurin b'chadash v'liktzor lefnei Pesach. You can't eat it, and you can't cut it before Pesach. You follow the question? In other words, I know I can't cut my grain before the Omer is cut. Okay? That much I know. When is it that I can't eat it? Is that the same standard or is it a later standard? If it's the same standard, then you should have listed it together. He says, you're right. The question that we had about whether it's one time or the other wasn't talking about that. It was talking about the last point in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, if they take root before the Omer permits them. So, my kodem la'omer. What does that mean when you say it's take root before the Omer? Rabbi Yona Amar kodem. In our edition, some flip this machlokes. He says it has to take root before the Omer is brought. Rabbi Yosi bar Zavda Amar Kodem Ketziras HaOmer. It has to take root before the Omer is cut. So it's not about the threshold for when you can eat it or when you can plant it. The question is, in terms of permitting it, based on the fact that it took root, and we'll pick up with that, God willing, tomorrow.